The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Faster Mike, good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line on Manx Radio. Your chance to have your say by calling 66 13 68. Text or WhatsApp on 166 177 or email studio at manxradio.com. The Department for Enterprise plays a big role in our financial future. And where will we be without money? If you have a question about our future in business or any of the departments or the aircraft or ship or central registries, well, we're on for the next hour with the Minister, Aaron Michael, MHK. Tim Johnson is with us. Faster Mike, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
And Chief Officer Andrew Stewart, Andy Stewart is with us. Hi, Andy.
Faster Mike, Andy.
Jolly good. So, business at the moment. Nobody's saying that it's easy, Tim Johnston. How is the department faring?
Yeah, I think that's right, Andy. I think, you know, we recognise that it's a tough time at the moment. We've seen over the last few years, post COVID, the challenges that all businesses have faced around, you know, cost increases, inflation, Ukraine war. You know, it's been a really difficult time, and you know, as a department, as a government, what we've got to try and do is sort of set out the playing field, if you like, for business to sort of get on and do what it does best. And that has been really challenging. I think it's fair to say that some sectors have fared okay over the last few years, but obviously we've seen others struggle. Yeah, but overall, you know, what we've tried to do is sort of steer a steady course through that. And I think as an island overall, if you look at the economy and look where we are, you know, it's not all negative. I think, you know, we should be proud of some of the things we've achieved, but we absolutely recognise that it's really challenging out there.
Okay, and Andy Stewart as Chief Officer. I mean, there are lots of bits to Enterprise, aren't there? With Enterprise, Locate, the race, TT Races, of course, Visit Isle of Man. What does the Chief Officer, what's your role? Do you oversee the lot? Do you get involved in any of the component parts?
So the short answer to that, Andy, is yes. So technically, Chief Officer, you know, I'm responsible for all activities across the department. I think what we recognised a number of years ago when we established the Department for Enterprise as it is now, following a review, is there's a number of distinct areas, and actually separating those slightly in terms of their focus, but they still all sit under the umbrella of the Department for Enterprise. So there's clearly a business development and sectoral representation, which is represented by the four executive agencies. The registries, which comprise airship and central registry, as you mentioned, and then the kind of core functions of the department that span strategy, policy, legislation. We still have a raft of legislation that sits under the department too, as well as the corporate central functions. So yes, it's taking it all in the round. That comprises the activity of the department.
Okay. Do you have targets? Do you have things you simply have to achieve?
So we set out an annual plan each year, and that's been formalised under this administration into a department plan, which goes before Timwald, yes. So clearly some of those sort of ambition and targets emanate from the individual areas. The whole point of the agency is that brings industry sector expertise and challenge into that model. But then each of the component parts will set out its ambitions for the year, whether this be to develop a legislative programme, whether it's to be hit numbers in terms of air or ship registry numbers. And they're all set out. And again, we report annually on that, normally every, you know, back to Timwald every 12 months at the moment. Where we've achieved, where we haven't achieved, and indeed where we've changed course during the year because things haven't followed the exact path that we set out 12 months ago.
Okay, right, well, let's get to the lines, and Howard's first with us today. Hi, Howard, you're live with the Department for Enterprise. Hi, Howard.
Hi, Andy. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
A question for Mr. Johnson. Well, for both, actually. Over the weekend, I read that an airline, albeit not a huge one, but a very valuable one, Blue Island, who serves Jersey, Guernsey, and the south of England. And they did serve the Isle of Man here for a while. In fact, they were doing flights from here not so very long ago to Jersey, Guernsey. Also, this is over the weekend. It's gone into administration. Just overnight, they said, that's it. were cancelled, everything shut, 100 people paid off. At the end of October, Eastern Airways, now a name again familiar with the Isle of Man, they went into administration. They're still in administration, but they're not functioning. They actually bought several of the aircraft from Manx Airlines. Our present airline, Loganair, that is owned primarily by two gentlemen, two brothers, and it is on the market for sale. The EasyJet, I read only the other day, is in the sights of a money company, you know, one of these
private equity.
Private equity, that's the word. Old age creeping up on me, Andy. Private equity. They're being looked at. Now, have the government or have your department heard of any of these? And are you keeping the eye on the ball? Because the two I mentioned further to start with, Blue Island, I remember them starting only a little aircraft, Froghopper they called, because they used to transport perishable goods. Eastern Airways was picked up by the fact that it was able to buy a lot of the aircraft that they were using from BA when they took over Manx Airlines. But again, it's a hard life out there. And are the government, are your department, keeping an eye on the ball? Because that airport that we have here is an extremely vital link, not only to England, but Scotland, Ireland, and eventually other parts of the world.
Okay, all right. Thanks for that. Obviously, the DOI look after the airport, but enterprise needs good air connections, Tim Johnson.
Absolutely, Howard. And I think, you know, you're making a really important point. And I think when we set out, which we have and had support at the beginning of this year for our strategic air policy for the island, looking at connectivity and how vital that is for us, what's happening out in the marketplace is very much, you know, centering to our minds. And what we've seen post-COVID is a huge change in the regional air market. And we've seen, as you've pointed out, Howard, a lot of the smaller airlines are really struggling and have fallen away. And actually, Loganair now is the prominent sort of player now in the market. It's much bigger than any of its rivals. I think when we say some of these rivals are actually falling away, as we've said. So we're in a challenging market. It's important to notice the difference between what is the domestic market, which is really struggling still, I think, in many ways, and of course the international market, where we've seen things return sort of back to pre-COVID levels. So I think you're making a really good point. And what we need to do as an island is make sure, obviously, we've got that mix of connectivity, and we need to work with the players that are in the market where we can. And that's what we're doing with both EasyJet and Loganair. We recognise what our core routes are for the Isle of Man, and that's into the northwest of England through Manchester, Liverpool, and also the importance of links to London, whether through Gatwick, Heathrow, and London City. EasyJet are serving Gatwick as well as into some of the northwest routes. Ultimately, they're profitable routes for them, and on that basis, I imagine they will carry on as long as they're profitable, and that's the harsh reality of the situation. There's no reason why they shouldn't carry on.
Does the department have a view on open skies? Because we have open skies at the moment. Is there any thought that to get a better service, we could dedicate routes to certain airlines? Is there any currency in that, do you think?
Yeah, and I think that's, again, part of the work that's gone into the strategic air policy was very much looking at our open skies policy that's been in place for many decades, and whether that was still relevant, and what other alternatives there are. So I think the principle of dealing and working with other airlines, as we do, and then looking to incentivize and disincentivize where we need to maintain that connectivity is really important. So when it comes to Loganair, for example, you know, we are already subventing routes at a cost of around £4.5 million a year to ensure that we have that connectivity to those key routes.
Right.
And now we're building on that. Now we're working further with Loganair and we're looking at doing, seeing where else we can now expand that to, and working with them. Ideally, what we want them to do and what they're keen to do is to base aircraft on the island and people on the island. So they very much become our regional airline, because that's that stickiness, if you like, means that we can build those longer term relationships. Because, but like you say, and as Howard quite rightly says, it's a bit of a wild west out there, so we need to make sure that we're doing what we can to secure the routes.
And obviously, Andy Stewart, people at Finance Isle of Man, Digital Isle of Man Business, they're trying to get international European business people to him. They can't get a plane on a Sunday night from Gatwick because of various situations. That's going to tie their legs together, isn't it?
So just to build on the comments of the Minister, we've recognised this for a number of years now, and all the way through COVID we've had direct involvement, and indeed it's some of the areas that I've led prior to taking up the role of Chief Officer. Just a very quick comment on Howard's very astute observations. It is extremely challenging in regional connections at the minute. We've worked extensively actually with a number of the individuals at Blue Islands as well, so I think our thoughts are with them at the minute. Very difficult time. We've recognised this, as the Minister said. We've set out the policy that's been endorsed by Timbal, that we will continue to intervene in the air services market for as long and as deep as is necessary to meet the social and economic needs of the island. And that means absolutely regional connections. It means onward international connectivity. We are fortunate, I think, when you look at some of the other areas around us, that we have acted and we have secured connectivity into those regional areas, but also those international hubs. So yes, Gatwick is important. EasyJet remain an important partner for us as well, alongside Loganair and, of course, Emerald, which serves Ireland at the moment.
Is it too simplistic to say we used to have a lot more connections, why haven't we got them? Why don't we have Gloucester? Why don't we have Newcastle? Why don't we have East Midlands? Is that too simplistic?
So I fully understand that view, and I can recall those days as well. The market has dramatically changed. It was changing prior to COVID. COVID accelerated the market position and the demise of a number of regional carriers. You know, there's often commentary around price points and around, you know, if they were cheaper, more people would fly. The reality is, regional aircraft, if you want a mix of load factor and volume and yet still have frequency and a choice of connections, the position we've set out is you need a blend of both the low-cost carrier model in terms of EasyJet and regional connectivity. Otherwise, you won't get the frequency. So, absolutely, have we lost areas from our route network? We have at the moment, but we've sustained and restored a number of those, and we are looking to build on that as we move into 2026 and beyond.
So you can reassure the public that work is going on for more destinations.
I think that's right, Andy. And I think the key to that as well is making sure that it's a proper plan, sustainable process. I think from what you're saying, quite rightly, we have had some in the past, but often what we've seen is, you know, a route has turned up and literally lasted a very short period of time and then fallen away again. So that's not what we want. What we want to do is make sure that when we come forward with plans and ideas and have that sustainable plan, that these are for the long term, to give confidence to visitors, to residents, to business, so that they know they're going to be there for the long term. That's what we're wanting to build on.
The talk comes and goes about Blackpool, Tim Johnston. Is there any future for a route to Blackpool?
Well, I cannot. There's nothing on the table at the moment, right, Andy. But at the same time, again, we're always open to discussions. So again, if it down to demand and if an airline route is wanting to do that, then clearly, again, we would have a conversation with them.
All right. Thank you, Howard. Final word, Howard.
No, it's just that. As I say, the airlines have come and gone. As you know, I was there for quite a long time and I saw them. But it's keeping an eye on the ball. And just as things are moving very rapidly in the aviation industry, and this happened for Jersey and Guernsey, and Ureni had to pick up the tabs for some of them. So would we have... it's a very, very difficult question. It's one completely up in the air. Is there any policy somewhere where a major like Loganair or something goes out? Is there anybody there that we can rely on?
Okay. Tim John, I mean, Loganair is technically up for sale, isn't it?
Yeah, technically, I think that isn't my understanding. Clearly, it's a ongoing business, and it is now, as I said, the biggest regional airline in the UK. It's cemented that position. I would like to think that it's got a very positive future for any purchaser looking at it, and But that's the challenge, and I think, as Andy said, that's why we need to make sure that we build relationships and have that mix between the low cost and the budget to make sure we do have that resilience. But we have to recognise that, yeah, it's quite a challenging market, and that's why I can assure listeners is there's a huge amount of work getting done behind the scenes following that endorsement through Timbal to make sure that we're doing everything we can to maintain and build on our connectivity.
Okay, I appreciate that, Howard. Thanks for calling today. And Stephen's next with us on Men in Line. Stephen, hi, you're live with Tim Johnson, MHA, Minister for the Department for Enterprise. Hi, Stephen.
Hi, Andy. Hi, Minister and the Chief Exec.
Hello.
And good afternoon, listeners. If I could turn your attention to, I think, is an important matter for the local communities of the island, that you have ignored or not given your best attention, and I'll describe it. In the UK, you will be aware that the Financial Conduct Authority have introduced rules to protect access to cash, and part of those rules are, if you're concerned in July last, Link, which manages the UK's cash access and ATM networks, has reassessed the needs of local areas where banking services are changing, and they've introduced successful changes and got 15 communities which had not previously been assessed as needing a banking hub will now get one. Six areas will get an automated deposit service or enhanced post office. And under these rules, banks and building societies must assess whether changes to local services, like closing branches or cash machines, leave local communities lacking ways to take out or pay in cash. Now, additionally to this, residents, business, local representatives and charities who feel there is a gap in cash access can request a review. Charities or local groups will be able to share a collective view of community needs, including the most vulnerable residents and businesses which rely heavily on cash. They then have 12 weeks to do an assessment. Now, on the island, let's look at what we've got on the island. From Castletown all the way up the west coast to Ramsey, there is no banks, post offices, and in July 2021, Timbal approved a report from the Chief Minister's Committee on Community and Public Engagement and agreed that an access to cash review be carried out. Well, so far, I don't think... Yeah, I know you've done a nice glossy report, but you've nothing tangible to give to people or give them hope of what you're doing. And I read the department will be using the information gathered from this and other sources to provide an update on the Access to Cash Report 2022 to Timbal. It is intended that this update report will provide options and recommended actions that should be considered. Now let's look at the latest announcement from the bank that was providing a very limited service to these areas, which was Penny, the mobile bank, that has been now announced it's withdrawn. So my question to you both is, what do you intend to do? Is it a further ignoring the needs of these communities that need access to cash, or do you intend to do something? And let's also look at the My Card, where the Treasury Minister has said he will help people get bank accounts as much as he possibly can. What is the point of a bank account when the banks have closed their branches and post offices have reduced? So I think you're letting the island community down.
Okay, lots of questions. Tim Johnson.
Yeah, thank you. And look, I hear that the concerns you're making there. I mean, I think as far as the reports that have been done, yes, absolutely, we recognise the work that was done and actually have responded to that report. We also brought in Link to look across the island to see, looking at our population, looking at our towns and villages and what was required and how that would compare, you know, to their metrics, if you like, as they use in the UK. And, you know, the harsh reality is on that basis that actually you would only have bank access in the capital only, and that on that basis because of the size of the island and the population. So we still do have, you know, broader access to that. We still do have banking in the north as well, and I think in the south to a certain extent. The broader question around access to cash, of course, is really important. And what we've seen is, yes, we have seen some reductions in areas, but that's also been replaced as well. For example, we see through the supermarkets, through Tesco, through in the Co-op, etc., has meant that actually we have maintained cash access. And if they hadn't done that, then through the report we would have made sure that something would have been done. So I would argue that there is still access to cash around the island.
So just to reiterate, what did Link say again?
Well, basically, Link, let's say, looks at an area, looks at the population, and it looks and works out, you know, distances to access to cash. And for the size of the island, you would only have equivalent to cash right. access in St. Douglas. So we've got a broader mix than that. But I think you're highlighting a really important point around the changing landscape, which is frustrating when banks are making these decisions to withdraw services. When there's reasons behind that, the harsh reality is these are commercial decisions. These are banks seeing huge drops in footfall, actually accessing banks now, more people using online means, for etc.
Well, some people are getting left behind, aren't they?
But the big but, Andy, which I was going to come to, there are people as part of that process who are not in that position. And it is important that we look at ways to do that and how we can help support those people. Mike Hart just mentioned as well, I am aware that the Treasury Minister has spoken about this. We are looking at that coming to an end, I believe, at the end of this year. And two things we recognise there, I think, is that, yes, you might have a bank account, as Stephen says, but that doesn't mean it's easy to access cash. Or you might not have a bank account. And certainly from my perspective, when I look in my constituency and I see how people behave, in the sense that they're very much in their own community, that they have access to shops in Andreas and Balaf and Jerby, that's a major challenge for them.
Is there a cash machine?
There isn't. The nearest cash machine's in Ramsey.
Right.
So I recognise the challenge, and I think what we're absolutely saying is, post my card, there has to be something in place for people to be able to get access to cash in these areas. And I know that the Treasury Minister, the Treasury, have committed to looking at alternative ways replacing my card. Now, people will say, well, why don't you just keep my card going? Because numbers are falling away, and it is a very expensive system to maintain. But there still needs to be something else instead, and there's certainly work going on that at the moment.
Okay, Andy Stewart.
So just as a follow-up, really, the Minister's covered that very well. I accept there's a frustration sometimes because the visibility of what goes on behind the scenes isn't quite there. So there was quite a bit of extensive work done around the access to cash, in terms of the cash machine, in terms of getting access to cash prior to. But then, you know, events happened, and actually the number of cash machines was catered for. But I wouldn't want to quote numbers, but I do think that the access that we worked with Link, it was tens of thousands of population they would expect, right, per cash machine, and we already had more coverage than that. Now with the position that the Tesco have taken, which is putting a cash machine in every one of their outlets, that problem has been addressed. But there is, I think, we still recognise the other direction. So people, especially businesses, who wish to deposit cash, and that is an area which is still ongoing. And I'll take it away that we're probably due to provide an update on that. So
there used to be more Link machines around. I remember Strang Stores had a Link machine once upon a time.
Yeah, so there indeed were, but clearly there's a cost, and normally those costs are met, right, by, depending on numbers. If Link can make enough money through the transactions, then they'll do it. If not, then there has to be some sort of financial recompense, sometimes from the retailer. So it's not an area that's been dropped, and certainly the concept, right, of banking hubs, you know, as I say, there's one particular area, and it is probably the west of the island that is suffering more acutely than others. But we'll take Stephen's point. It's not something which has been dropped, and we'll okay, continue to work on it.
All right. Final word, Stephen.
Well, it seems to me that it's been dropped and ignored, and like most things from the government at the moment, and I use that word collectively for Comin and yourselves, I think you're hoping it'll just go away and no one will notice, or they will think, what's the point of asking, because you will do nothing. And I think you're ignoring a huge swathe of people, and it exasperates me when you talk about comparisons between the UK and the Ireland. We want Isle of Man solutions for Isle of Man problems. We are not a county of England. We are a country in our own right, and our people deserve better than you're currently governing for us. So I do hope you not only will look at these issues, you will provide tangible solutions for people for this particular matter.
Okay. All right, Stephen, we appreciate your call. Thanks for being with us today. Enterprises, on Department for Enterprise, we've got the Minister, Tim Johnston, MHK, Aaron Michael, MHK, and the Chief Officer, Andy Stewart. We're on till 1 o'clock today. Call, text, email and WhatsApp.
Make Athol Airport Parking your wash-and-go partner when parking at the airport. With no advance booking required, simply park your car in the designated Athol rental return spaces right next to the terminal. Hand your key to our valet desk and while you're away, we'll wash your vehicle and return your car to the terminal for when you get back. For prices and our full range of services, including comprehensive valeting menu, just search Athol Airport Parking online. Athol Airport Parking, part of the trusted Athol Garage Group.
It's amazing how new curtains and blinds can transform your interior. And in Millichap's curtain department, you'll be spoiled for choice. With made-to-measure curtains and thousands of fabrics to choose from, along with curtain poles, whether classic or contemporary, plus window blinds in a huge range of styles, from roller to Roman. And don't forget Millichap's fabulous selection of wallpapers, with free measuring service and installation available for windows and walls. It's all in store at Millichap's.
Deck the halls with boughs of holly and much more when you visit Watson's Nurseries this Christmas. Watson's Nurseries for cut and potted Christmas trees, including non-drop at great prices, along with decorative festive wreaths and superb gift ideas like trees, fruit trees, large specimen trees and shrubs, and gift vouchers. They also stock logs and coals suitable for fires or wood burning stoves, with delivery available. Call 801 812. Find something festive at Watson's Nurseries Greba, on the Peel side of Hawthorne Inn.
Back pain, neck pain, scoliosis, headaches, joint pain. At Align for Life Spine and Posture Clinic, we've been helping Manx residents for 16 years with our holistic, evidence-based care and therapies. Plus, we're open after work and Saturdays, making it even easier to see us. Visit alignforlife.com or find us on Facebook for more information. Align for Life, 16 years serving the community of the Isle of Man.
The Bishop's vote moved a step closer to extinction last Tuesday when the bill which seeks to abolish it finished its passage through the Legislature of Council. The bill had been paused for some time while a LegCo committee considered the impact of the measure, but despite setting out clearly that the loss of the Bishop's vote would most likely result in the loss of a Bishop of Sodor and Man, LegCo supported Key's resolve to remove what many see as an undemocratic vote. Two of the more prominent speakers in the debate, Gary Cluett and Paul Crane, explained the process and the two sides of the debate on agenda this evening at 5:30 p.m. on Manx Radio with me, Phil Gorn. With the Bishop's vote all but gone, will Keys shift their attention to the undemocratic Legislative Council next?
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
And Enterprise today. One of Enterprise's component parts is the Isle of Man TT Races and the motorsport team responsible for the promotion and the delivery of the TT Races and the Classic TT. I've had quite a few questions in about the TT. I'll just give you them. Will there ever be a TT scoreboard as they used to be? The other one, is it true that they've reduced the power restrictions have been put in place to downgrade performances of sidecar engines, and that it'll slow down the sidecar engines this year? And the future for the TT, a big question, but there we are. Tim Johnston, what do you make of those? The scoreboard, first of all.
Yeah, look, I think, we recognise that the school board is very much part of, I think, of sort of TT heritage, and it's been, you know, sort of an obvious thing that's been missing for quite a few years. What I can say is, you know, we are looking at the moment at some funding options to bring forward and replace, put something back there. Right. I mean, it's got to be viable. I said it's got to, you know, it's, you know, there's a cost to that. We've got to look at it. But absolutely, we recognise right. that's something we would all like to see. Something that's certainly been championed by one of my little members, Mrs. Maltby, and we're, you know, we're happy to take that forward and do what we can.
Okay. Have they downgraded the power of the sidecars this year?
I can comment on that one, Andy. So I think it's important to clarify the department's role as promoter of the TT. So in terms of sort of technical information about classes or types of machines or the kind of regulations within those, that's very much a matter for ACU Events Limited as the race organiser. Saying that, I am aware that there have been conversations around sidecar technical specifications in the past and indeed more recently.
Right.
But, you know, this isn't dodgy, the question. It genuinely is a matter for the race organiser and right. ACU in terms of a technical spec.
But your, if you like, the connection between... It's Mr Phillips, isn't it, who's in charge of motorsport. So does he talk with ACU all the time, presumably?
Absolutely, yes. I mean, that relationship is clearly critically important for the event. So there is fundamentally a very strong working relationship between all the partners, ACUE being the primary one, but then also the TT Masters Association, Manx Motor Racing Medical Services. It is a Herculean effort to stage an event of that scale. Yeah. over that course.
It's fair to say that unless you're involved in the organisation, you don't understand the organisation, because, as you say, there's ACU, TTMA, everybody, if you like, is a component part, and any one of them could make the whole thing fall to pieces if they don't pull their weight.
That's a very good point, which is why it is very important that we maintain those relationships. Listen to the expertise, and I know there's obviously clearly comment from the general public in the Isle of Man as well, and everyone will have a view. But it is a huge operation to make that all work kind of seamlessly, and you know it may look seamless from outside.
Yeah. But do you ever get frustrated when people knock the TT?
It's not my role to get frustrated. I think if there's a responsibility on us perhaps to explain that better sometimes as well, and I think we need to take that on board. It is a huge event, but the scale of the event, I can completely understand how it impacts people's lives and businesses differently as well. So I think it's right that we listen to those. It's right that we listen to feedback and try to respond to that as best we can. But ultimately, you know, we believe in the future of the TT. We believe the actions that have been taken over the last few years to put it on a sound footing were essential to its long-term sustainability. But equally, we accept that everyone is entitled to a view, and we should be listening to that.
Tim Johnson?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think Andy's right. And, you know, this is a global event. It's an iconic event. There's a huge responsibility to make sure we maintain it, move it forward. What I would say is that actually look what's happened around us. Look at what's happened in Northern Ireland, for example, where we've seen it really quite decimated, sadly. And that happened because they've come up to the same challenges we've had, but haven't had clear plans of how to move things forward.
That was insurance, wasn't it?
Insurance is one thing, but just general costs generally. Insurance is a huge issue. But actually what we have to do is move this event forward, and that is a challenge. And we recognise that for some people, they don't like to see things change, and we recognise that. But at the same time, if we don't move forward, I mean, the idea that we have a government runs something like this nowadays isn't crazy. But we're all passionate about it, and we all want to make sure it survives and goes forward. And that's why we're driving it forward. That's why we're looking for that new global audience, to make sure that we can make it last into the future. It has to be able to generate income to cover the cost. This is a big cost as well, but also a huge opportunity.
So if people,
for the island.
If people think the government runs the TT, are they right or wrong?
Well, we're the promoters. I think the department are the promoters of the TT. But I think, as Andy said, this is very much a partnership, I think, you know, across government and also across the island. We recognise, you know, everyone has a buy-in into this event, and it's important that we're sensitive to that. And it's always challenging getting the right balance. But ultimately, we want it to thrive. We want it to move forward, and those costs are relentless. And so right. we need to look at ways we can make sure that's viable.
Well, can I ask you then, because you're the politician, do you get frustrated when people knock the TT?
Yeah, of course I do. I see the amount of work that goes on. You know, it's a small team, the motorsport team, and it's a 365-day of the year job. You know, it doesn't stop. As soon as the TT's over, the planning for the following year, there's a huge amount of passion there to move it forward. So, yes, I do get frustrated. But at the same time, we have to listen to that, and we have to make sure that we are keeping the TT honest and sound for the future as well.
Okay. Alison just asked, is the TT safe for the future? I mean, how many years ahead can we see the TT happening?
Well, as far as we're concerned, you know, we're absolute faith in the future of the TT, as far as the government's concerned and moving forward. But that will only happen unless we're all open to change and moving it forward. And that's, you know, we're all committed to that.
Okay, a message in. This is from Sammy just said, Rob Callister over the weekend said that the fibre rollout, apparently, Timwell members attended a briefing by DfE last week. Onken's not getting fibre until 2027. Is that right? Sorry, just having a glass of water.
Yeah, I think there's, as far as the fibre is concerned, I think if I can speak from my department's point of view, and there's been a bit of confusion around this. So we had the National Broadband Plan, and that was to roll out fibre across the island, and that was to roll out to all of the difficult, not what we call the non-commercial areas, where government has helped to fund that rollout, and that's been massively successful and it's now completed. And I think there's only about 1% of properties left on the island that haven't been passed yet by fibre, so that's really positive. And I think we're seeing over 60% connection, which is, again, it's really, really good. So some of this challenge is what we call the commercial areas. These are the responsibilities of Manx Telecom, and Onken is an area where that is a challenge, where the default is is poles, to put poles up. That's the way to get quick and free access. But clearly there are challenges around that, there are planning challenges around that. So that is causing delays. And obviously Manx Telecom are having to work in these communities to find alternative ways of doing that. And that's going to take a bit longer.
And Leslie just said, well, if Manx Telecom gets sold to Jersey Telecom, what happened about the public money that was put into rolling fibre out?
Well, I think we see that as a much broader need for the island. I think that's for us, that's an investment in the island. That's an investment in our future to make sure that we have the proper connectivity right across the island. Right. So I don't see that as an issue.
Who owns that? Do Manx Telecom own the fibre? Do they own the infrastructure, or does the government own the infrastructure?
No, the infrastructure is owned and put in by Manx Telecom, but of course that infrastructure wouldn't be put in unless the government supported it, and I think that's the key point in areas of sparse population in more rural areas. It's absolutely right that the government is doing what it can to improve connectivity.
Okay, we're with Enterprise today on Man in Line through till 1 o'clock. Lots of questions to get through and some phone calls as well.
Gifts and toys to pet supplies and bird food, winter garden supplies and much more. Riley's Garden Centre has everything you need for the festive season. So call in at Cool Road, Braddon, or visit rileys.co.im and get set for Christmas at Riley's.
Visit the new look Cafe Villa and sample the new menu. With disabled parking right outside the door, Cafe Villa is the perfect spot to park up for hearty breakfasts, pancakes, baked potatoes, delicious mains, award-winning ice cream and much more. Using local produce where possible and supporting local producers. With seating inside and out and a stunning sea view, it's a relaxing spot. New look, new menu. That's Cafe Villa on Douglas Prom. Open 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. every day, with easy disabled parking spaces at the front entrance.
Have your say. The Council of Ministers has accepted a proposal for an offshore wind farm off the Isle of Man for examination. Take part in a public consultation and tell us what you think about the application from Moore Vannin Offshore Wind Farm Limited. Go online at mima.gov.im to find out more. You can also respond directly at consult.gov.im. If you prefer paper, collect and return response forms at Third Floor Government Offices, Bucks Road, Douglas. Read the application online and at Douglas City and Ramsey Town Libraries. The consultation closes at midnight, 18th of November. It's time to have your say.
Meet Jane. When Dad began forgetting the little things, we knew we needed help. Mam Benham walked us through every step.
Real stories, real solutions. Secure tomorrow today with Mam Benham.
Are you a small charity here on the Isle of Man? Are you looking for volunteers, hoping to raise awareness and chasing those crucial pounds and pennies to support your work? Well, Manx Radio can help. You could be our next 1-3 Charity of the Week. With daily on-air coverage, podcast and social media promotion, we can help support you and those you help. Just email the numbers 123@manxradio.com and listen out for the feature each weekday between 1 and 3pm. The Charity of the Week, brought to you by Kell Properties.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
And Tim Johnston, MHK, Aaron Michael MHK, the Minister, and Chief Officer Andy Stewart from Enterprises with us. And, oh, it's former MHK Chris Robertshaw with us now. Hi, Chris.
Good afternoon to you. A question for Tim, Andy, please, if you don't mind.
Okay.
Very simple. What's not to like about the Local Economy Forum's proposal regarding the minimum wage? For three reasons. First of all, it would result in higher take-home pay for the employee. It would mean a more reasonable cost increase for the employer. And it would actually bring government closer to its own ambition with regard to living wage. He's been sent a copy of the proposal. What does he think of it?
Yes, thanks, Chris. Thank you for your call. Yes, I have seen it. Thank you. Look, I think as far as I'm concerned, you know, we've been through an agreement through Tim Ald in July, where we had, you know, strong support for the changes we were looking at making, and again, literally a handful of weeks ago, bringing through the orders for implementation next April. I think going into detail, looking at it, you know, for me, ultimately, this is what's still being proposed here is something which is very challenging for government, which is a direct support into sectors, and also the fact that there's an assumption that the data is there to be able to do that in a fair and accurate way, and I would argue that is not the case, in the sense of knowing who's on minimum wage within a business, what hours they're working, etc. I think it's a very complicated process. And then linking it to so pay off Ireland to, for example, UK and their minimum wage plans or living wage plans, again, you are sort of farming out that whole process to another jurisdiction, and then you are linking yourself to their pay movements, not what's relevant to your own economy. So, you know, I think we've been through this over the last few months. One of the things I wanted to do is get real clarity for businesses, and while we recognise there is still this big challenge of set out from the Poverty Committee back in 2021 to reach parity, I think this process of going to meeting earnings, having that clarity that people have, or businesses have, about 10 months notice pretty well of knowing what that figure is going to be going forward, puts real clarity in place going forward for businesses, and that the rate will then follows, you know, the inflationary rolls of an economy, I think is a fair and transparent way of doing it.
Chris?
Well, Tim, don't you think you should be listening to the business sector a lot more carefully? Because you haven't consulted with them. If you'd consulted with them, you wouldn't be saying half the things that you've just said. And I could pick on every single thing that you've said. I'll just pick on one. You've given the private sector 5 months now to deal with things which are really beyond their ken. Now, this is the second time you haven't listened to the sector, the business sector, because you made that big mistake over the proposed room tax for the hospitality sector. Can I just ask you to think again about the way you consult with the sector and join us and engage with us to understand that what we're saying is not in agreement with what you've said on almost every element. I mean, for example, let me just take one, the issue about linking with the living wage in the UK. Now, the point being is that because Tim was rushed ahead with an enthusiasm about the medium 60 66% of the median wage or whatever it was. The point is that what you're doing, and it's ludicrous, you're linking the private sector pay to the public sector pay, which is accelerating to an even greater extent, and then asking the private sector to pay for those increases. I mean, I think you need to meet with the local economy forum, Tim, and understand what the situation truly is, because you're running us into really serious problems.
Okay.
Thanks, Andy.
All right, thanks for calling today. Now, a message about the... Oh, this is more about motorsport as well now. A note in just says, when will you start treating four-wheel motorsport like two-wheel motorsport? Does the motorsport team have anything to do with four wheels? Andy Stewart?
That's a great question, and again, without wanting to make a personal comment, I have a background in four-wheel motorsport and have a passion for rallying as well, so I can understand the sentiment of this question. The reality is that the motorsport team and the team based at the grandstand have become increasingly focused on TT as the event has grown. That's been a conscious decision made at department level to keep investing and to almost put additional pressure on that team. There are other areas of the department that support, including our visit team as well, because we recognise the economic contribution. And indeed, I've had numerous conversations recently with rally organisers, and I have a great deal of admiration, respect for the guys who stage the rallies, who put their own time in on a volunteer basis, and it is recognised. Could we do more? Yes, I think we could. We're engaged actively in discussions with them at the moment, and I would love to be in a position where we could set out a clear 3-year kind of plan for four-wheel motorsport on the island, and if that requires support and assistance from the department, then I think we should be in a position to put that forward.
People love rallying on the island. Mm-hmm. People love coming to the Isle of Man, don't they?
They do. I mean, it is, you know, and I accept the point that the Isle of Man is a home of motorsport, and it's more than just two wheels. But I think it's important not to try and trade one off against the other. Yeah. I think.
But we could have both, couldn't we?
We could. I think there's an opportunity for us to have both, and I would love to be in a position to understand how we could make that happen over the longer term. And that does require some clarity around the potential for the events, the potential to grow visitor numbers, particularly out of season, because I think that's where four wheel motorsport can really play a role. And aligns to our visit strategy as well. So the answer is yes, I think we could do more, and I would love to have conversations on that.
Okay, we're running out of time now, but Visit Isle of Man, we don't have a tourist board anymore, we don't have a tourist department anymore. Visit Isle of Man is a component part of the Department for Enterprise, Tim Johnson. Mm. Where does this leave the tourist industry, the visiting industry? What is the plan for the future?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, Visit Agency has set out a strategy, a long-term strategy, 10-year plan. The headline of that is to reach, you know, 500,000 visitors to the island by 2032. They're on track. I think, it, you know, we had a really positive year last year. I think 330,000 visitors to the island, about £212 million spent in the local economy by visitors, which is really positive. And certainly indicators for this year looks like we're going to be above that. And actually, looking across the jurisdictions across the United Kingdom, I think everywhere else has seen a fall away. So I think it's really positive to see we're getting that. You know, again, it is one of those subjects where I appreciate people have very strong views about. But I feel that the Visit Agency has a lot of confidence now in understanding its market. It's recognising and targeting that market, people who want to come to the island, whether it's people who enjoy the outdoors, in the environment, the quality of our food and drink. You know, we are seeing that happening, and so you know, I think the strategy is sound, and it's really positive to see that happening.
Okay, William just said, could the minister make a comment on cruise liners? Are they worth the trouble? Do we get plenty of money out of cruise passengers?
Well, yes, and again, I mean, you know, separate to that is the cruise numbers, and I think actually the evidence suggests that yes, they are spending a considerable amount of money in the economy, and actually you'll see, you know, at certain times of the day in season, if you go to some of our other towns and villages around the island, they're packed out with people coming, visiting, buying. So I understand there's always been a little bit of skepticism around that, But I would say that the evidence suggests that actually, no, they are spending in the economy.
Okay, because he also says, look, if they're spending in the, could you get the Department of Infrastructure to paint the sea terminal then, and make the sea terminal just a little bit more welcoming to the cruise passengers?
Yeah, and you know, and I think that's a fair point. We recently, over the last 12 months, took back in the Welcome Centre from the Cabinet Office. Obviously, we're based down there. There's been hopefully people will see there's been a bit of investment gone on inside the sea terminal around that, and little shops and areas around the Welcome Centre, and certainly there's work going on that. We also set up within the department what's called the Destination First Board, and I think that's a great sort of collection of people from across the island and local authorities as well as visit, to recognise actually it's those little things that matter to people, and actually things like making things are tidy, things are painted, signs are renewed and clear are really important, and we get that, and there's a lot of work going on in that space now, and we'll continue to carry on as well.
Okay, thanks for being with us today. Appreciate it. Thanks, Tim John. Thanks, Andy Stewart. Good to talk to you. We're open line tomorrow on Tuesday and Wednesday as well. Thursday, we're live at the Woodburn Pub in Alexander Drive in Douglas, the Woody Club. It's a weekly social event for older people. So we'll have the outside broadcast unit there talking to the voices of experience at the Woody Club this coming Thursday at the Woodburn Pub. In the meantime, thanks to Chris on the phones, and thank you for being involved in Man in Line.
WINT